Pardon me, this is the operator. Need to inform all participants that today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect your line at this time, and you may begin.
Thank you very much, Laurie. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is a SIC who is working group call on the 20th of August, 2013. On the call today, we have Mikey O'Connor, Alan Greenberg, Volker Greiman, Mark Anderson, Tim Lees, Carolyn Hoover, Frederic Guillemot, and Steve Metallitz. We have apologies from Marie-Laure Lemineur, Abby Doria, and Suzanne Frosson. From staff, we have Lars Hoffman, Ricky Koenig, Barry Kalb, and myself, Natalie Perrigan. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Mikey.
Thanks, Natalie, and thanks all for joining us today. Do the usual thing and stop for the SOI and the agenda. I'm going to slip something into the agenda. I want to just mention that I'm going to send along a post-working group survey that we've developed in the SCI for you all to test. So I've got an addition to the agenda. Is there anything else that people want to mention? Changes to statements of interest or tweak the agenda? Okay. I think we'll just dive right in. As you can see on your screen, quite a few of the comments were agreeing with our initial report and supporting it in one way or another. And as you can see now on the draft that's in front of you, we've gone ahead and filled in quite a few of the responses with the thank you very much for your support and the fact that we don't really have a recommended action. I think where things left off was essentially on page 3 of that document. I think I'll leave it unsynced so you can drive around for yourselves, but one of the things that's entered the document is some of the staff comments, and we had a little bit of a conversation about this on the list, and I think Steve raised a really good point, which is it probably in the future would be a good idea for us to try and figure out a way to get these staff comments in through the public comment cycle in such a way that they become a part of that conversation. I think with perfect hindsight, I probably could have been clearer about that when we were talking about it. But I also don't think that it's a good idea to run these through it now. I think that's complicated. And so unless, Steve, I'm sort of doing this for you, but for anybody else, unless there's really strong objections, I think I'd like to just pick these up in this conversation. In many cases, I don't think that they have a material impact on the report, and I think that sort of retrofitting these in through the public comment cycle could get a little bit confusing, complicated, etc. But let me go to Marika and then Alan and then anybody else who's got any thoughts about this, and then we'll sort of take it wherever we wind up from there. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. This is just to know that, and it's something I shared with the list as well, that these comments actually were submitted when we were looking at different versions of the initial report, providing some feedback on some of the items that were in there. I think as well, as we go through these comments, I think some of them have already been taken over by events or have been discussed. So I don't think either, as you said, Mikey, that these will probably make any material changes to the discussions we had or the report. As a more broader point, I would caution, though, in having staff submit comments through the public comment forum, because I think that makes it unless you're really looking for a formal staff statement, for example, on whether we agree or not agree with the recommendations. What this was really trying to do is trying to address some of the feedback we've received from working groups to have input earlier into the process. So as part of the conversation, as a working group goes through items, it's trying in a timely manner, and I think that's the point where we need to do better to try to get it into at an earlier stage, get feedback from colleagues that would be involved in possibly implementing some of these recommendations to get some feedback from them into the conversation so that can be part of the working group discussions as you, you know, finalize ideally your initial report. So I think submitting them as formal comments, I think, may not get the results that working groups what you're actually looking for. And also to note, because, you know, the public comment review tool, I think for other working groups, what we've also done, for example, is pick up comments that people have made during workshops or other meetings. So there's definitely a way as well to, if there's a concern about, you know, accountability and transparency, to, for example, include at the top of the public comment review tool a link to that initial email where those comments appeared that I think were basically integrated into a version of the initial report. Like we also would do if, for example, there had been comments that came from a session in, for example, in Durban. We would provide as well a link to know that people can go back and check what was said at the time. But at this stage, I would feel uncomfortable to actually submit these to the public comment forum, as these were not intended as a, you know, formal staff position, but just some feedback that I got from several colleagues that thought was maybe helpful as a working group was going through its discussions and looking at these different items.
Okay. I'm gonna circle back to that in a minute. I need to sort of puzzle through something here. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. I think this what happened this time is a moderately unique phenomenon. If I remember correctly, and I may not, these were changes to the interim report to make corrections, clarifications, not so much to our logic, but more to the for clarity and specificity and things like that. They came in relatively late in our cycle, and we were rushing to get the interim report published. And we looked at them, and most of them did not seem to really have substantive impact on what we were recommending or the arguments behind it. And we, for expediency, said, let's just leave these out right now. Maybe one or two of them we incorporated because there were substantive changes. Let's just leave them out right now and look at them afterwards because we don't have time to do it now, and it's not going to have a great impact on the report. So these are things, cleanups to a large extent, that should have been done for the interim report, but we deferred it due to time pressures. And in general, that will not happen. In a better world, we would have simply either agreed or disagreed, and they would have ended up, you know, being part of or not part of, as we wished, the interim report that we published. Because we skipped that step, we still have to look at them now to make sure there aren't any things, you know, that we don't want to change, and we need to change the report if indeed there's something to change. So they're coming into the cycle as we're looking at comments. I don't much care whether we keep them in the comment tool or not because we're considering them now, but I don't think we need to worry about the general case because it shouldn't happen if we had gotten that input in enough time without the deadline looming. Marika has a better memory than I do, but that's the way I remember it. So I don't think we need to engineer how to do this in the future. I think we just need to look at these and see, are they corrections we want to make or not? Thank you.
Yeah, and I think also what this also reminds me of, thanks for that, Alan, because your memory is better than mine. I think maybe where the confusion comes in is that they came into the public comment tool. And so I've got some ideas about that. But, Steve, you get to go first.
Yeah, thanks. This is Steve. I think Alan's recollection is correct, or at least it coincides with mine. I think this actually will recur in the future unless the staff gets its comments in more promptly. So maybe just for the future, I'm fine. Let's go through this. I agree with you. There probably won't be any major changes that result from it, so it's not a big deal. But in the future, maybe this should be part of the protocol that the staff needs to get its comments in well before the deadline by which an interim report has to be published. I'm sure there's a better way to word that, but hopefully in the future. Because if it had come in earlier, I agree with you, it would not have been an issue.
Well, and I think, this is Mikey again, I think the other thing that we may want to do is reconsider the notion of actually putting these into the public comment tool and rather treating them as a separate document, because it confuses things a little bit when we treat them as public comments in our analysis. So that's another retrospective idea. Marika, you first and then Alan.
Yeah, it is, Marika. I completely agree with Steve's point that we need to get better at doing this in a timely manner. And maybe that's something as a general point for working groups to consider, that at some point maybe indeed they have a pause and allow staff then to review or provide feedback by a certain deadline. Where I'm sometimes struggling is that, of course, I don't want to put recommendations that are only half-baked in front of my colleagues and then the week after having to go back and then back again. So maybe it's something that we need to build in into the pace of a working group, where at some point where we feel that we're getting close to finalizing recommendations, and then to allow a point of saying, okay, now we give staff 1 or 2 weeks to actually come back and provide any feedback they have from implementation-related considerations, or where they may have views or feedback on technical aspects, and do it in that way. Because I think where it basically fell apart here is that at some point you moved faster than I anticipated the working group moving. So that's why I actually had allowed for a certain time frame, because I think an issue we were targeting really to publish just before Durban. And in the end, if you recall, we actually finished a few weeks earlier. So that was basically on my part why I didn't anticipate that happening and build the internal comments in such a way, which in the end didn't allow you sufficient time to address them then. So completely agree that we need to do that better. And we're actually working on having a kind of mechanism in place that would have a more, someone in place that would work more in tandem with whoever's the policy support person from the implementation side to really do that in a more efficient way. So I'm really hoping that in the near future we can get better at that and really build it in maybe as well as a formal step as part of the working group deliberations to make this more effective and efficient.
Great. Alan. Go ahead. Oh, and then Aubrey's here. And
thank you. Marika said part of what I was going to say. Her recollection is right. We did finish early, and I think we all had fatigue at that point. And since the comment, remember, this is an unusual PDP in that we have one recommendation and a hell of a lot of analysis, excuse the expression. And most of the comments were on that dialogue and either correcting errors in fact or phrasing things better, if I remember correctly. So we didn't think that the comments were that important, because they weren't really going to impact the recommendation coming out of this. So we deferred it until we looked at the public comments, and I guess that's why they ended up getting into this document. Otherwise, we might have forgotten them. But Steve is right. Yes, we will always have some late things, but in this particular case, most of them were commenting on not the recommendation, but the body of the text. And there's always a fear, as Marika says, that you don't want to send it too early. Although, in fact, what they commented on probably was frozen, most of it, but not all, because we were still dickering with it late. So I'm not sure how much post-analysis we want to do right now and just get on with the work. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we've sort of gotten to a pretty good place in terms of the thing. But Aubrey, you're next, and then we'll, unless there's anybody else, we'll wrap it up. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. I guess I'm speaking after the discussion is over, as you've already announced where we're at on it, which is cool. I think what Marika and everyone's talking about getting staff involved earlier is good. I actually have absolutely no problem with receiving staff comments, especially staff that may be more distantly interested but not involved, to come in as any stakeholder's comments come in. I may be alone in being staff as yet another stakeholder, but for them to bring comments in with the comment period, or even like most of us do, perhaps sometimes even a late, I absolutely see no problem with it and would hate to see us making rules that in any sense would set a precedent or a notion that they couldn't. Thank you. And I know that was purely meta junk.
No, actually, that's that echoed where I was at the beginning. So I'll stand up. You know, I kind of like the idea of staff being treated just as a stakeholder. They certainly are a big stakeholder. They're the folks who have to implement a lot of this stuff. And I, in a way, it makes sense to me to have these come through the public comment cycle if it seems like a reasonable thing to do. So, sorry, Avery, I didn't mean to draw a line just above you in the conversation. I was sort of on those tracks and then saw, anyway, I apologize for that. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. I can't actually imagine most staff wanting to expose themselves be viewed as trying to direct where the policy, where a PDP is going, and you know, at some level that's that crosses a line. So I can't really imagine it. I would have no problem if someone chose to do it, but that's a different issue completely. Here they just showed up in this as ticklers to us to remind us to do them because they were submitted well before the interim report needed to get out, before the interim report did get out. So, you know, how they got into this document is interesting. Whether they should be allowed to come in via a public comment period, you know, Avery says she doesn't mind. I say I'm dubious that it will happen, but, and Tim, I suspect, will have something on a different side. But again, it's not an issue that we need to look at right now. We can think of making a recommendation in the future. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that it's in our brief much to actually make a recommendation. Mostly I'm probing to see, you know, how to treat them here. And then we are tending to get a bit off topic. Sorry about that. Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I have no problem with, you know, if it, they should choose to do so, to submit comments during the comment period. I guess my, as to whether they're a full-blown stakeholder or not, I have some questions about that. But certainly, I guess, up to the point where they begin to try to influence, as Alan said, where policy goes. I think certainly, as you said, they have a stake in implementation. They might have advice as far as, you know, certain legalities are concerned, those kinds of things, maybe some background. So I think there is certainly a number of areas where staff comments are certainly warranted. I just would be very cautious against crossing that line into trying to guide or direct where the policy itself should go.
Yeah, I think this has been good. I agree with that as well. And I think with that, unless there's anything else, we'll sort of tie this off. It seems like we've got agreement that these are in order. That was the main thing I wanted to make sure, is that we, you know, didn't come to the conclusion that these are out of order and shouldn't be considered, but I don't hear anybody saying that. So we'll go ahead and consider them right along with all the rest. And the rest of this conversation, I think, is just useful input for Marika and the staff and other working groups to consider, but I don't in any way imagine us making any kind of recommendations on this. So thanks. With that, by my reading, the first one that we need to take a look at is number 12. Does anybody see one earlier that we need to touch? That was where I got to in this list. I think that's it. Let's start with 12, and then if there's one before, we can pick it up. Marika, you see something?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think this is just to clarify with this comment, at least as I interpret it, is more as making a note of that, indeed, if the working group recommends a standard who is responsible also for existing GTLDs, that, you know, further consideration needs to be given to how that's implemented and possible cost factors. I think partly this comment is probably overtaken by the fact that we didn't get any feedback from registries noting that they had concerns about this, but I think this is just, you know, as noted, it's not a view on whether it should or shouldn't be required, but more noting that if this becomes a the new standards that it will need to be further considered on how to do that as part of the implementation-related discussion.
So this is Mikey again. Would it be safe to say that in a lot of cases we might want to, in the bottom of our charter, we've got a section that talks about implementation issues that we identify. Would it be safe to say that this would fall in that kind of category, that this is sort of not so much a recommendation, but falls into the keep an eye on this when you're implementing it pile? And the reason I'm asking that is because I think many of the comments that we have yet to get through fall in that category. And so I'm sort of testing the waters on that idea. Mark, you're next. Go ahead.
Hey, Mikey. I guess I'll make 2 points. One to number 12. I think this is this is a good feedback from staff. I think it's good points. I wouldn't necessarily put these in implementation. I think we've sort of addressed these already. I think the first part is around consistency, and I'll have to go back and read what we actually put in the section, but I think what we've discussed and in our intent around response consistency is that the working group would recommend the same response format that has been adopted for new GTLDs. So I think that came about after the staff feedback was provided. So I think we address, our intent is to address the first part already by providing this recommendation for a consistent response based on the current, what has been defined for new GTLDs. And I think the second part we've, is more good feedback. The point, there's a potential impact on existing thick registries. So, for instance, if the thick registry has different response formatting, they'll need to make changes to their WHOIS implementation. And I think my recollection is in that section we really looked only at cost impact on thin registries. I think with just some minor tweaking of what we put in the response, for cost impact to thick registries, we can tweak that just slightly to expand that to include thin registries as well. I guess in summary, my point is, I think this is good feedback, and I think these have either been addressed or there are items we can address with just minor tweaking of our response. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. I think I'm going to let Steve go. Marika gets priority in my view. Sorry about that, Steve. Let me go to Marika first.
Thanks, Mikey. And my comment is actually a direct response to what Mark was saying, because I think we actually did reach out to the registry members of this working group that currently run SIG registries and ask them whether there would be any impact. And I think we also called it out specifically in the report, asking for input on that specific item. And I think I do recall someone providing feedback and saying, well, most of us are already actually supporting a new GTLD registry, so it shouldn't be too costly or too difficult to actually switch to that format. And I'm happy to dig out that email, because I think it was an email conversation that we had with some members of the working group, but I believe it's already covered explicitly mentioned in the report, and we did ask, I think, for specific input as well from existing SIG registries on that item. But as I said, I'm happy to double-check that.
Thanks. Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Steve. I had two questions. One is, I guess this has been answered by the previous comments. Did we actually recommend not only that all registries be thick, but that all registries follow a consistent response format?
Yes, we did. We mentioned the new GTLD standard for that.
Okay. Thank you. So this is a relevant comment then. that's been made here by the staff. But I really don't understand the second sentence of this comment. Is it about timing issues, which it seems to be? Is it about cost, which it also mentions? Or is it about ICANN having divested itself of any authority to make any changes to these contracts with registries without going through the consensus policy process, which I think we are going to be reaping the negative impacts of that for years to come, and maybe this is just one example that ICANN doesn't have the authority to require existing thick registries to conform their WHOIS responses to those of all the new GTLDs, and if our recommendation is adopted, to all of the formerly thin registries. So I'd like the staff to explain whether this is a timing issue, a cost issue, or a legal authority issue that they're raising.
Marika, it sounds like you're on deck. Go ahead.
Thanks, Mike. It is Marika. I think, as I understand it, indeed, it's a question on how this will be implemented. Of course, if you do it through contract renewals and maybe different timing because you don't renew all contracts at the same time, but of course, if it's consensus policy, it basically would apply to everyone at the same time. So I think it's basically asking the working group to be as specific as possible, whether they'd see this as a one-by-one discussion that ICANN would need to have with the different existing SIG registries, or whether you intend, and that's how I understand it currently, this basically to be part of a SIG WHOIS consensus policy that basically would apply to all GTLD registries, and it would also prescribe how responses would need to be handled by registries. I think it's more a question of, please be as specific as possible if there are specific views from the working group on how this should be implemented, as noting that, there may be difference in timing in the two approaches, and as well there may be a cost aspect. But as I said, I think it's an item where we specifically asked existing SIG GTLD registries to comment on, and as far as I'm aware, I don't think we got any comment saying that that would be a hugely costly effort or would inhibit them from doing so because of a cost aspect.
This is Steve. Thank you for that response. Should we then modify our recommendation so that we're not only recommending that, in other words, our one-sentence recommendation that everybody responded positive, or most people responded positively to, should we be adding a phrase to that saying the provision of thick WHOIS services with a consistent WHOIS response format should become a requirement for all GTLD registries? Then that, if that's accepted, go through the process, it's accepted by the board, it's a consensus policy, then it's binding on all the existing thick registries without having to go through a contract amendment. So I think since this was part of our recommendation before, we explicitly asked the thick registries whether they had any concerns about it. None of them did. Maybe we should modify our recommendation to say that, so that it's clear that this is a consensus policy that we are proposing.
Thanks, Steve. That sounds good to me. Tim, you're next.
Yeah, exactly. I think Steve's exactly right, and I agree with that.
Alan?
Yeah, I certainly have no problem if we make that additional recommendation. I'd be mildly curious as we go along to hear whether, given that registrar under the new agreement, and pretty much everyone's going to have to be under the new agreement within a year or so at this rate, registrar format is consistent, registry is consistent for all but the TLDs that have not renewed recently. I'm wondering how many of those registries are going to doggedly keep the old format and not simply go to the new format, because it's easier to only have one format. In many cases, these are all run by other operations that are using that are already using the new format for one thing or another. So I'd be mildly curious how many this would really impact, but I have no problem with doing it and getting that level of consistency. Thank you.
Mark?
I think I had sort of been assuming that we had been talking about this as a recommendation for consensus policy, but I think Marika made a good point. We didn't specifically call that out. I think this is good advice from staff that we should, explicitly state, that this is, it's our recommendation that this be included in a consensus policy that would apply to all registries. I should point out just for clarity's sake, make sure, somebody reading our report is clear on what we're recommending. From what Tim and Steve said, I think their expectation is that this would be a consensus policy as well. So unless anybody objects that it shouldn't be a consensus policy, I think that should be included as part of our recommendation and final report.
Thanks, Mark. Carolyn, you're next.
Hi. Actually, we are one of the registries that would be impacted because we don't use one of the registry services. We've had our own since 2001. But I did, ask the registry operator about this, and we can make the adaptation fairly easily. So we would not object to a consensus policy. However, obviously, there are going to be lots of changes to who is. So I think whatever statement we make in that point, about that point, should be taking into consideration the timing of all the other changes. We don't want to force people to make a change and then, 6 months later make another change. So we should make sure that that's included in the statement, I believe.
Yeah, we talk a little bit about timing interactions in another part of the report, but let's flag that one for a minute. Alan, you're in the queue again. You want to go?
I am in the queue again. Something that we've used in other PDPs is a statement saying if we're, now we're at the stage where we're making multiple recommendations. We have in the past made a statement saying implementation of the two should not necessarily be tied together based on the actual implementation. So, the staff will have some freedom of phasing the implementation as it affects different registries. So I think just a statement like that, it's not a recommendation as such, but just a parallel statement, will make sure that we're not delaying everything until the most difficult thing can be done.
And it
allows us to take into account, as Carolyn said, the other things that are going on with WHOIS at the same time.
Right. Okay, I think to wrap this one up then, what we've concluded is that pending cries of outrage from an as yet unidentified source will take Steve's suggestion and move it into the recommendation. I like that. There's a nice elegance to that. As the guy that wrote the cost section of the report, one of the things I think that Mark said that probably does bear flagging is that we should probably add a section or at least review the cost section of the report to acknowledge that this special case for thick registries, already thick registries, having to convert the format of their WHOIS display, like Carolyn's case, because I don't recall having that specific use case in that section, so I think that's an easy thing to add. And the timing issue, I would put squarely in the implementation section, then maybe make that a sort of a general statement in the implementation portion of our report. Anything to add to that? I think we're done on that one. And thanks all for that. I think that was a very helpful discussion. Moving on to 14. Maybe, Marika, I'll let you do a little introduction of this. And I think the thing that would be the most helpful is there a specific ask in here that staff is suggesting, or is this more of a comment. I was having a hard time sort of teasing this apart. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika, and if I recall well, and we need to look it back at the report, I think we did emphasize this point somewhere, because I think the point is basically trying to bring across how important SICKWHO is has been in those cases where there has been a registrar failure or where data hasn't been properly backed up through data escrow. So I think we do make points somewhere in the report that we're saying, well, you know, in the case of data escrow, there are now more copies of the data available. But I think the point it's trying to bring across here, and then those cases where there's sometimes when you need to go to data escrow, the data is not necessarily available because it wasn't properly escrowed by the registrar. I think it's just trying to emphasize that SICKWHO would really help in those kinds of scenario because that data would also be available in, from other locations. And I think the point in the last sentence basically gives a concrete example that, you know, SICKWHO data is used in almost every involuntary transition of domain names from de-accredited registrars. So I think it's just trying to emphasize that point. And if we haven't done so, maybe it's something to call out in the report to know that, at least from a staff perspective, this kind of data has been really helpful in those kind of instances.
Thanks, Marika. Tim? Maybe muted, Tim.
Yeah, I think that... can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Hello? Okay. I guess my question here is that, you know, if the registrar also failed to deposit current data into escrow and they failed, I mean, isn't... Once we have everybody, all registries sick, and registries are also escrowing data, won't that be the backup? Or if down the road, as the comment points out, the need for registrar data escrow, you know, ceases because of registry data escrow, I mean, doesn't that really become the data that would be used? In fact, I question if a registrar has failed, whether using their data escrow solely is a good idea anyway, and if it shouldn't at least be compared with registry data, or if maybe using the registry data isn't just a good idea going forward. So I think it kind of misses that point that there's still registry data being escrowed, and in an environment where all registries are thick, that would seem to be, would kind of cover the situation where registrars might fail to escrow data.
Yeah, this is Mikey. I think that this comment sort of, at least for me, falls in the bucket of the working group thanks you for your agreement with our conclusions, and the only thing that we might think about pulling from this is the last sentence, which says, indeed, the SICKWHO data is almost always used. But for the most part, it seemed to me that this one fell into the we agree and thus no actions required pile. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, well, if I understand correctly, what this was doing was suggesting an additional argument we could use to strengthen the argument on stability.
Right.
And as such, if we feel that argument, you know, could benefit from being strengthened, we can include the whole thing or a subset of it. Remember, they weren't commenting. This wasn't saying we did something wrong. This essentially, as I read it, is strengthening the argument, giving real life examples, which we weren't necessarily in a position to provide. But the people who folks who support registrars and registries were in a position to provide. So unless there's something wrong with it, I have no objection with including it. I do question whether the term RDE is defined or not, and if not, we should make sure it is. But other than that. If we had reviewed this in a timely manner, I think we would have said, yeah, that's not a bad addition to what we said.
I think that's right. I think we probably would have stolen that language.
Oh, it wasn't stolen. They were giving it to us with the intent that we take it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's not stealing.
Okay. All right, Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, I just agree with what Alan said there. You know, I think we, you know, and I don't have the, you know, I should probably have the initial report in front of me for this, but you know, I think we just spoke in general terms how having, you know, multiple you know backups backup points is better than fewer, right? But this Alan's point, you know, this provides a concrete example of, you know, why it's better in, you know, a case where it would be better, and, you know, I think that's been a focus of our working group, is to provide, you know, real life examples, and I think this does that. So I think it's, you know, it's a good suggestion for inclusion.
So what if we put this in, you know, the working group thanks the staff for agreement with our conclusions and the recommended action, explore inserting some of these arguments in the appropriate section of the report, something like that. Seems like the way to proceed. Tim, go ahead.
Actually, doesn't 15 kind of tie in with this, that the staff's concerned that they may not have legal right to the registry's escrow account, which I think they should be working towards remedying, by the way, but, it, you know, it's in the case of registrar failure. But that, yeah, we... I think you're right as far as the response is concerned, but it seems like 15 would be kind of respond that way to 14, 15 as a both questions. I mean, I don't, they seem to be kind of tied together there.
This is Mikey. I think 15's actually got something we may want to dig into a bit. 14, I think, is pretty much thanks for your comment. Figure out a way to stick those ideas into the report. I think 15 gets to a conversation that we may want to have. So I'm going to move on to 15 unless there's anything else about 14. I think in 15, the question in my mind is whether we want to nudge the staff in some direction on this. You know, do we want to make a recommendation? Or a suggestion along those lines. Marika, do you want to introduce this and maybe put some meat on these bones before we get into a discussion? Sorry to throw it at you unexpectedly like that.
This is Rick on item 15. I mean, I think that's all I have, and I think it's basically making the point that we don't necessarily have a legal right to retrieve data from the registry's escrow account. It may be helpful for the working group to make a recommendation to the end that should be allowed. I'm not necessarily sure what the steps to that end are, but if the working group wants, I can definitely further look into that and provide some additional feedback on that.
Thanks, Marika. I'm going to go to the queue in a second, but as I think about this, I think another question that we need to raise is the one of scope. I'm not sure that since this is really about all registries, not just the thick to thin transition, we may want to agitate about scope as well. But carry on. Mark, go ahead.
I hadn't read ahead to this one yet, but this is a great point, and a meaty one as well. Again, not having, you know, any of the contracts in front of me, you know, or, you know, a legal background at all, you know, I think this point is correct. I think in general, the way the escrow agreements are written is that, you know, ICANN's, you know, a third-party beneficiary of the data and would only be granted access in the event of a failure of the registry. That's the intent of the registry's escrow is that ICANN gets the data in the event of registry failure. So I think the first point is, you know, that it's valid that you know, ICANN doesn't necessarily have legal right to retrieve the data in the event of registrar failure. But I also have a suggestion on this, and the way the new GTLD agreements deal with this issue is they have a clause for that. It basically gives ICANN the right to request what they call exceptional access to thick data, and the registry agreement spells out, you know, the specific use case is in the event of registrar failure. So in the event a registrar fails, ICANN would request to the registry to provide a report on all the thick data relevant to that registrar. And I think that's I think that's actually a great way to address that, and I think that's something we could consider adopting as well. And again, this is in line with some other conversation we've had. From a registry perspective, this is something we're doing for all new GTLDs anyway. So extending it to do it for existing TLDs. It's not a major burden, I don't think, and it would meet the would meet the needs here. So I think that would be something we should consider, or at least could consider, as part of our recommendations. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve. what Mark just said makes me think that maybe 15 is not correct. At least in the case of new GTLDs, ICANN will have the authority. It may not be a legal right to retrieve. It sounds like a right to make a request, but I guess what happens if that request is not honored? I don't really know quite what the legal landscape is here. I think in terms of your question about scope, this is probably out of scope as far as a recommendation, but it's certainly something that we could flag as an issue. And again, I would just mention that to the extent that ICANN is now in the position of really being unable to make modifications to registry agreements without going through the consensus policy process, I think this is going to be difficult if registries decide they may not want to cooperate with this, or that they're not eager to see that type of change in the escrow agreement. People kept saying, give us examples of situations where ICANN might need to make what they were calling a unilateral change to the contracts. We've just come up with two in this discussion in the last 20 minutes. And I think we're just going to see more and more of these.
Thanks, Steve. Kim?
Well, Steve and Mark pretty much said most of what I was thinking, but I will just add one comment that in regards to Steve's comment about ICANN needing, unilateral ability to change it. And maybe there's some validity to that, but I just think in this particular case, I think registries would be hard-pressed to publicly resist ICANN's attempt to make a change that would make our system more stable in the case of registrar failure. And I think that the other kind of facet to this issue, I guess, that I was thinking of as we were having this discussion is that, we're in an environment of vertical integration. So registries could be registrars in some fashion or another. So I think there's that issue there too. And certainly in that case, there should be access to some sort of escrow data that's being kept there. And if we get into, where brands are their own registrar, for their own TLD, I'm not sure if there's been even being an accreditation agreement in effect in that case. I don't know how all that's going to play out, but there's a potential, that a registry could act as its own registrar without having to be accredited. I don't know where that's going to go, but so there's a lot of little facets here. But I think it would be very difficult for registries or registrars to sit down and argue against the change that would make our system more stable.
Thanks, Kim. Alan?
Yeah, as I'm listening to this discussion, and it's a thought I've had before, we're thinking in depth about this whole issue of registry, registrar, escrow, and how the data gets accessed and who has rights to it, and as was just mentioned, vertical integration. It is not clear to me that anyone else has had this, gone through this process before. I may be arrogant and ignoring other parts of ICANN or parts of ICANN that may have, but I haven't seen this documented anymore. We have some worst-case scenarios where the registry is the registrar and they're not submitting escrow data, and when they fail, everything just goes poof and it's gone. And that could just be a technical failure, never mind the organization going bust. I really think we need either a recommendation or a parallel statement, and I would actually suggest a recommendation, not a consensus policy recommendation, but a recommendation that ICANN staff thoroughly review all of these issues, and we can enumerate the kinds of situations we've talked about and the types of things, and formally put the onus on ICANN, with the board accepting it, that someone think about all these things. Because it's a rat's nest, and I have seen no evidence that anyone else is clearly thinking about it other than on this group. And I may well be wrong, but it doesn't hurt to ask to say it anyway. And if it's already been done, they just take it off quickly. Thank you.
Okay, this is Mikey. I think to wrap this up, let me hit the highlights. I think the first highlight for me is that maybe the ICANN staff person who made this comment wasn't aware of the provisions that Mark described, where ICANN, at least in some of the registry contracts, maybe all, probably new GTLD contracts, has this provision that allows them to request the data. So it does seem to me that some, and that it plays pretty nicely into Alan's comment, that research is required. I'm trying to think how and where to frame that recommendation in our report. We could certainly stick it in the implementation issues pile. We could elevate it a little bit higher in the report. We could include essentially a summary of this discussion in the section that we're talking about right now, which is the stability section of the report. And as I sort of think out loud, that seems like a useful direction to take. So maybe what we do is treat this one again for the response. We thank the staff for raising this issue. The action is to summarize the discussion that we've just had and develop a list of outstanding issues that need to be researched during implementation, something like that. Does that seem like a reasonable approach? Is that enough of a recommendation, Alan, to trigger the board stamp of approval and then some staff action, or do we need to go even a little further than that? Any thoughts?
My inclination would be to belabor this and not omit any option, any of the scenarios we've thought about, because there's a chance then that they get omitted at the next stage. But we can work. We don't need to wordcraft on this call.
No, I'm just trying to think of sort of where and what. So how about we put this in the actual report? Let's not relegate it to the implementation. Let's put it in the report. Let's flush out the issues that we just described on this section of the call, document those, and then once we're in wordsmithing mode, maybe it will become clear what needs to be done. And remember, we only have a one-sentence recommendation, so if something needs to get promoted all the way up to recommendation status, maybe it'll be easier to figure that out.
We now have two, I think. Because we've decided to
we have two?
Recommend consistency of presentation.
Oh, I was...
We could phrase it in one sentence. I take it back.
Yeah. Steve came up with a sentence that just sticks that in. So I think we're still at one. Anyway. Okay. Unless people think we're on the wrong track, I think this is a good spot to stop. Let me just mention one thing. I'm on the Standing Committee for Improvements, which is the caboose at the end of the new PDP process. And one of the things that that committee has done is developed a essentially post-working group review survey that we would like to test quickly. And I volunteered us to be the guinea pigs for that, and I mostly wanted to give you a heads up on the call to see if anybody had, I did see if anybody had any problem with that. I'm going to send out an email in a few minutes to the list, but just wanted to see if anybody had a reaction one way or the other to the idea of being sort of a test case for what would then become a survey that every participant in every working group would be asked to fill out at the end of the working group. I'm not seeing any. I've probably done a bad enough job of describing it that nobody has any reaction at all, but let me send that email, and just leave it that if something strikes you badly when you read that email or start going into the survey itself, please don't hesitate to mention it on the list. Okay, I think that's it. We'll see you all in a week. Thanks all. Great discussion. Making pretty good progress through this. And we'll see you next week. That's it for me.